Boogie Monster with Kyle Kinane and Dave Stone.
Contact the best authorities. Check on anything that seems to be extraordinary, no matter what it is.
When you see something that's frightening, it looms large in the consciousness.
It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition.
The Boogie Monster, podcasting the unknown.
Jumping in. I got no brain.
You got no brain?
Listen to the sounds, man.
Yeah, it's like they're building Noah's Ark out there.
Yeah. Yeah, about 3 a.m, a curtain rod fell down in here.
Yeah.
And that's good. Normally, we got the little decorative mirrors. These things fall and make a big old noise. And then, there was a crow, like the big ones.
Yeah.
Like the big
crow.
The big motherfuckers.
Are those different types of crows or are those just big ass crows?
I don't know.
Cuz I've seen them where I'm like, is that a vulture? Nope, that's a crow.
Yeah, like this is like I want to say the size of a chicken, but that doesn't, I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's a big. Then that was outside the window at 6 a.m. just going on.
What was his problem?
Oh, Rachel even went out there to scare it off.
Yeah.
In my head, I was like, what are you going to do? It's just gonna fly away unless you're going to shoot it. Well, I wasn't in the mood to shoot a crow.
Then you'd have to eat crow.
Oh, God.
Sorry.
That's not really how that phrase works at all, right?
Well, no, I just mean like if you shoot something, then, you know,
you wouldn't want to eat it. Yeah.
Yeah. I really don't even eat crow. That just means you got to eat your words, like you're talking shit.
Go back on your words.
Yeah. You know? Crows are supposed to be super smart, man.
Well, smart enough to give me a real shit night, so I took us a couple of weed candies.
Yeah? You took some weed candies today?
Yeah.
High right now?
I don't know, man. These candies, they don't give me the kind of high where I'm like, oh, cool, I'm high. I'm like, I'm just this. Good thing I solved the D.B. Cooper crime.
Oh, did you solve that?
Yeah, I told you last week.
Uh-huh.
The fucking crew did it.
Okay.
So I don't even know why we're having a part two.
Yeah.
I told you who did it.
Hmm.
Unless something's come out in the week since.
Well.
What's going on? We don't have to jump into it. What's happening? I'm drinking coffee.
Mm-hmm.
It's Boogie Monster with Kyle and Dave.
Yeah, that's us.
And I'm drinking coffee. I'm trying to get there for you.
Uh-huh. It's all right, buddy. Yeah, you haven't been sleeping well. You the day before, you said something about not sleeping.
Yeah, I was just up at 3:30. I was just up. Yesterday.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't sleep well either. Did I tell you my sleeping arrangement over there with the lady? It just changed.
No, what?
When I first moved in, her bed was kind of small and just old and lumpy.
Oh, you guys had like a full bed or something. Right?
Yeah, I think she had a full. And she's tall, and I take up a lot of space the other way. And it wasn't a very comfortable bed. I used to sleep on the couch every night. Loved it. I love sleeping by myself.
Man, that.
And, but she has since, when I got back, while we were on tour together, she went out and got a king size bed.
And, oh, she went king size,
yeah,
babe.
And now I don't have any excuses. So she's making me sleep with her.
I mean, that king size bed, though.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. But
you don't gotta worry about nothing.
But she didn't get the box spring, so she got the box spring from the old full, and she.
I was gonna say she's just doing that bachelor shit where she just got the. Oh, at least she's got a box. Yeah, you're just gonna ruin your new mattress.
Yeah, and she's
just
gonna
put the mattress on the ground like a cool college dude.
So she's got this overlap and then or underlap rather, and so she slid some boxes and books and stuff.
No,
but it's pretty cool. But
just put it on the ground like a date rape.
Yeah, I guess so. But yeah, no more couch for me. You know, they all say, "Oh, I'm sleeping on the couch tonight." Even before this, I was always like, "That's not so bad." The TV's out there, and you.
I always thought the idea of getting rest. Like, yeah, you can Brady Bunch that shit. Like, and the idea that rest will make you both happier people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My parents haven't slept in the same room for years.
That, really?
That's a different situation.
But yeah, and then she gives me shit about. I don't want to sound like I'm complaining. She's a great gal. We're doing great. But she
here we go. Give me some dirt.
She complained that I didn't. She complained I didn't sleep in the bed with her. But then also, you ever get this? Like you don't like to snuggle. And like, okay.
No, because I love to snuggle.
I'll cuddle you. You know, if that's what you need.
I love me a little cuddling, buddy.
Here's the thing. When it's time to sleep, though, I can't snuggle or cuddle or nuzzle or whatever the fuck you want to call it. I can't do that.
It's called intimacy, Dave.
Well, I can't do it. I just can't do it. I can't do that and try.
Problems with intimacy?
I can't do that and try to fall asleep. Like, seriously, we're supposed to spoon each other and then fall asleep? Like,
yeah,
that's some TV shit.
No, man. It's called love.
No.
It's called love, Dave.
No. Well. And I never have been able to do that. It's like when it's time to sleep, get the fuck off me. Don't touch me.
Wow. All right. Well, I was going to have to Dr. Drew this episode, yeah. Dave, but is it a.
No, but seriously, like.
No, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, if we're hanging out.
You're not going to sweat all over each other.
Yeah. If we're hanging out on the couch, watching a movie, all right, I'll give you a little bit of that action. But like when it's time to sleep,
I'll give you a little
I
bit
need
of
my space. I don't, you know, just get away from me. We don't need to be breathing into each other's faces all night and flailing around. Just you stay over there, I'll stay over here. Or preferably, I'll be on the couch. But now I don't have any excuses.
Yeah, man, I just, right when you just fall asleep where you fall asleep.
Mm-hmm. Man, my dream is to have that Warden June Cleaver set up. You know, same room is fine, but two different beds.
Maybe even the Waltons.
Yeah, the Waltons probably had that. Frank and Estelle Costanza.
Some real models. Yeah. Real relationship goals you're looking for in the world here.
Oh, man. But, yeah, so, you know, got a new bed, and I'm having to adapt to.
King size, baby. It's great stuff, man.
Not only sleeping indoors, but in an actual bed. No bed, no mattress in the old van. In the mini, I had the mattress in the big white van.
You didn't have a mattress in this old one?
No, man.
What were you doing?
Just had like five of those egg foam crates.
All like and the yoga mats?
And then I slid those into a sleeping bag and had a little makeshift mat. But, yeah, it was too small. Couldn't fashion a mattress in that thing.
What is this? So sad.
Oh, no. Nah, it was good times. Didn't have to cuddle with anybody, though.
Yeah, you didn't have to cuddle with anybody. Lucky you.
Yeah.
Boy, poor Dave's got to cuddle.
Now I got to snuggle and cuddle and do all that shit.
Yeah, man. It's great. I love it.
What else going on, man?
I don't know.
You've been down the last couple days, buddy.
I got the gout's banging. I'm doing everything I can to get rid of this gout. No, I got other weird pains.
What are you doing to get rid of it?
Not eating meat.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a
taking
start,
my cherry pills.
Cherry
drinking
pills.
Apple cider vinegar.
Wow.
Taking my medicine. Like, that's how fucked. I don't know what it is about. Like, I have a pill that I take every day,
mm-hmm.
and I get a monthly prescription,
mm-hmm.
and that's usually has held it off for a year. And that stuff, honestly, a bottle of that with my insurance, less than $4 for a month's worth.
Wow,
1 week's worth of the other pills, the colchicine, take two a day of those, so I get 14 of those pills 1 week.
Wow,
is $80.
$80 a week for that one
for
pill?
The other pill, yeah.
Jeez.
So I have, but those are like the emergency ones. So I've been going through those. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, when you start spending that much money on medicine, which in my situation, not nearly as fucked as some other people's, I'm like, well, work, goddammit. Why am I just taking a $80 worth of pills? I did a show at a place called Petra Mediterranean Restaurant in 1000 Oaks last night, and that was fun. I don't have any other details other than I did that.
1000 Oaks.
I know. I can't. It's called Thousand Oaks. Yeah. I just kept calling it 1000 Oaks.
Why is that so funny?
Precisely 1000 Oaks.
So, Mediterranean restaurant, huh? That's some.
Thing was, I didn't eat nothing because we got Mediterranean food the night before here.
Uh huh.
So I get my hummus and ganoushes. My bababs, my ganoushes.
So Mediterranean food, that would be like Zanku chicken.
Persian, yeah. Persian Greek type stuff. Smelled good, anything. Mm-hmm. Had two glasses of wine, told my jokes.
Yeah.
It's a good time. I had fun.
That's cool, man.
Oh, I gotta say, we have forgotten some shout outs.
Oh yeah.
We should do those.
Yeah, we should.
I'm gonna say shout out to this dude Dylan that I met on a bike ride. And then he was going past us because we were all crippled going up the ride. And then he stopped on the side of the trail. And we're just all hiking. You're like, oh, hey, how's it going, man? He's like, I'm listening to the Boogie Monster right now. So shout out to Dylan, who was listening to the Boogie Monster while riding up El Prieto the other week.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, I was with my little gang. And so shout out to Dylan. You're a much better rider than me, so I'm not going to bother you to go riding. Because you're good, and I'm not. So you get up the hill. You were cruising. He's cruising up the hill.
Yeah.
We're all huffing and puffing our way up there. This guy just blew by.
You got your little gang that you go with?
Yeah, my gang. Uh-huh. One of the gang's moving. Colin's moving. So safe travels, Colin. We'll see you up there in not Northern California, mid-California.
Also, shout out to Old Town Roasting. I think it's our buddy Sean. I think that's who the dude is. Old Town Roasting, somewhere here in California, sent us several bags of coffee. Have you had this stuff yet?
I'm drinking it right now.
Oh, is that what you're drinking right now? Cool.
Yeah.
I'm not a coffee guy, but I gave it to the lady, and she seems to enjoy it. You're drinking, well, I don't know if that's what you're drinking right now, but Morningwood. Yeah, Morningwood, a couple other different ones he sent us. But
yeah.
It smells great. I love the smell of coffee.
Coffee smells nice.
Yeah.
I like black coffee in the morning.
Yeah. I got to start getting into coffee instead.
I mean, it's getting me. Yeah, what are you drinking? A Diet A&W?
Yeah, I'm a grown man.
Drinking Diet A&W.
Diet A&W root beer. That's one of the best diet sodas on the market. No caffeine either. So.
I think that's what my neighbor who had a stroke drank. It was him on his riding lawnmower for his 1/8 of an acre.
I used to know a guy.
Drinking Diet A&W.
I used to know a guy back in Bald Ground, Georgia. When I lived there, this dude I hadn't seen him for like a year or two. He'd lost a bunch of weight. And I was like, dude, you lost a lot of weight. How'd you do that? Diet Dew and Fig Newtons. He drank Diet Mountain Dew and Fig Newtons, but he's always talking about Diet Dew. Yep. Diet Dew is a miracle drug.
Yeah, that's not good for you.
Some sort of cleanse.
It was not good.
Oh man, had some blood sows today. Had some barbecue.
Yeah, man.
Yeah,
you're telling me about that. What happened?
A little disappointed, man.
Really?
I follow. Well, here's the thing. I had the brisket was on point. Brisket solid, but I had some smoked chicken. I had some ribs. Had a little bit of everything. They overseason it now. Just they're going a little overzealous with the spice and the seasoning. It's a little too. A little too salty, just a little too strong.
Mm.
So, you know, and I had the collard greens. They were too salty. Got to be careful. Got to be careful with that barbecue.
Maybe just get a bad batch.
The last time we were there, I started to detect a little bit of a slacking off there. I mean, you couldn't tell by my performance that night. I mean, it didn't slow me down when we got the, whatever they call that, the dinner tray. It's like $120.
Yeah.
That doofus took us there.
Oh, yeah, we were being courted.
Yeah. But, brisket was on point, but blood sauce, man, you gotta watch out with that seasoning, man. You over-season a good piece of meat, man, it just ruins it. So, there it is.
I'm going to be smelling it.
Yeah.
That's the thing about that, but, man, that stuff, you belch that stuff out, and it's just around.
It's like
It is around.
That Zanku garlic butter, man, that stuff stays with you for like a week.
I just went through a tub of that.
Oh, you bought a tub of it?
Rachel asked for extra, and they gave her like a.
Ooh.
I'm making a size with my hands here. That's
much more than the little ramekin they give you.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Like four or five times the amount.
That stuff's like liquid gold.
I will have licked the inside of that.
Oh man.
Like a model eating yogurt. I'll get my tongue into the crevasses.
Yeah, the crevasse.
Yeah.
Right on, buddy. Sorry you're not sleeping. Sorry you're all gouted up.
Yeah, man. I just was kind of rooting for it to get better.
Mm-hmm.
But what are you going to do?
Good to see you hobbling around.
Yeah, man. I'm out. I'm out. I'll get there, man. Mm-hmm. We're going to make it.
There it is.
I'm going to be all right.
Well, should we get into part two of this D.B. Cooper action?
Yeah.
All right. So just to recap, we talked about it last week. D.B. Cooper, Thanksgiving Eve, 1971. Actually, he gave the name Dan Cooper. DB was a misprint in the paper a few days later, and it just stuck. Gave a name, Dan Cooper. Paid $20 one-way trip from Portland to Seattle. And while they were in the air, handed the stewardess or the flight attendant a note, said, hey, I got a bomb. Listen to what I say. And yada, yada, yada. $200,000 later,
you yadded.
He jumped out of a damn airplane, never to be seen from again. A lot of suspects, a lot of speculation, a lot of speculation that he died, that he didn't even survive the jump. I guess that's a pretty tricky jump. Some paratroopers and parachute and skydiving experts said, oh, man, at that altitude, at that time of night, in that location, a lot of kind of a lot of vegetation, a lot of trees, that maybe he, and there's that river, maybe didn't even survive. But since then, what is that, almost 50 years ago? Tons of suspects. And I was thinking about this the other day. Did you say your dad, does your dad use a cane?
No, I use a cane.
You use it. Yeah, I know that. Oh, there's that dog again. last night when I was studying up on some of these suspects, I thought, because they thought that he had some, a lot of knowledge of airplanes, maybe an airplane mechanic. I was like, yeah, wonderful.
You think my dad was D.B. Cooper?
Wonderful Pat Kinney was D.B. Cooper. Meeting your dad just one time, he's got that demeanor of like, I got a secret that you and I'm not going to tell.
He's got secrets. I don't think that's one of them, but he's got secrets. You're not wrong about that.
So anyway, I want to go through a list of some of these suspects. And just recently, I think just in the last few weeks, there's been another suspect that they have. Well, a lot of this stuff, including the one I'm talking about now, the most recent one. People trying to sell books, you know, it's like,
yeah, so they got to.
This case has been so many amateur detectives and sleuths and investigative reporters, you know, throughout the years have tried to crack this case, thinking that they could do what the FBI couldn't. So every few years you get a new suspect, not necessarily the suspect themselves coming forward, but maybe a relative or a friend like, oh, so-and-so. And then most of the time, at least several of these cases, people are coming forward with these new suspects because they got a book that they wrote and they're trying to get some attention for them. So I just go through a few of these, a handful of them. One guy, this guy named Ted Mayfield, on the day of the skyjacking, that's a funny word, skyjacking, six different people called the FBI on the day of the skyjacking to suggest that this Ted Mayfield might be a suspect. So that's kind of crazy. You got six different people like, yeah, this dude did it. Mayfield.
What's Ted's deal?
He was a skydiving instructor. He had a criminal record, including armed robbery and stealing an airplane. So I guess, you know,
people are
connecting some dots. He's a skydiving instructor. He's got a criminal record. He tried to steal a damn airplane. So, yeah, maybe point the finger at old Ted. 4 hours after Cooper jumped out of the plane, Mayfield himself called the FBI to let them know that he, in fact, did not do it. And then he offered up his own list of local skydivers who may have committed the crime. So he's automatically coming forward saying, I didn't do it, and then trying to snitch on all his local skydiving buddies. FBI crossed him off the list of suspects as they believed Cooper, whoever Cooper was, the guy that actually did it, was not an experienced skydiver. And I mentioned this last week, since he chose a defective parachute. He requested four, I guess two mains and two backups. They intentionally gave, the FBI gave him one that was sewn shut. He picked that one as his backup. So they think that this guy's obviously not an experienced skydiver, or else he wouldn't have picked the defective parachute from the batch of four that they gave him. Ted Mayfield would have known the difference because he was very experienced. However, FBI later learned that in 1994, you know, 23 years after the fact, old Mayfield, who's supposed to be a skydiving instructor and expert, he was arrested. I don't know exactly what the charge is, something in the area of like negligence, when two of his students died from jumps because Mayfield gave them both faulty parachutes. So maybe he didn't know. Maybe he didn't, you know, so that.
Yeah.
The fact that originally they were like, well, it can't be Mayfield because he's an expert, and D.B. Cooper picked a faulty parachute, but then
maybe not so much.
Yeah, years later. Mayfield's arrested when he gave two of his students died during jumps. That's got to hurt your business. So.
Yeah.
It's old Ted Mayfield.
All right. Okay. So that's one of the guys.
Yeah. I got several more here. Let me tell you about Richard Floyd McCoy Jr. Old Dick Floyd McCoy. That's... Get this. In the 12 months following the D.B. Cooper skyjacking, 15 copycats attempted similar heist. 15 copycats here. One of these copycats was Richard Floyd McCoy Jr., who he jacked a commercial airliner with a fake gun and a paperweight that resembled a hand grenade. And like Cooper, McCoy parachuted from the rear hatch of the plane, but unlike Cooper, he left several fingerprints behind. McCoy was arrested, sent to prison. 3 months later, 3 months after he went to prison, he broke out of prison with a fake handgun made out of dried toothpaste. Somehow he fashioned a fake handgun. First of all, how do you break out of prison?
I love the craft mindset that goes through someone trying to break out of prison.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You hear all those stories of all these crazy homemade shanks and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
made a fake handgun out of dried toothpaste. Authorities tracked him to Virginia, where he got in a shootout with FBI agents and was shot and killed. And the FBI agent that shot and killed him made some sort of statement that when I killed McCoy Jr. that day, I also killed D.B. Cooper because that guy was convinced that
Oh, he thought it was it.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe he's just, well, yeah, that making his arrest and not murder, but whatever you want to call it, more extravagant by saying, yeah, the guy I killed was also D.B. Cooper. So, yeah.
Okay.
So this guy's kind of a violent dude, old Richard McCoy. How do you break out of prison with just a fake handgun?
I guess if you just got, that's all you got is time in there to think.
Yeah.
Anytime somebody breaks out of prison and it was like sneaky, not just some violent murder a guy and run type thing, there's a little part of me that's impressed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, you know, not absolving anything else, but I'm like, oh, wow. I don't know if I could do it.
Speaking of which, I saw on one of these clickbait things the other day about the movie Shawshank Redemption, and somebody just made the point, you know, he broke out because he spent 9 years or whatever tunneling that hole, and he would cover it up with those posters. But then the day he vanished, they're searching his cell. The poster is up like normal, and they rip it off and see the hole. The point was if he had crawled through that hole, how was he able to then fasten the poster behind him?
If you already figured out how to get out of a maximum security prison, I think you'll get that one. I think you'll sort that one.
Yeah, good point.
You put little weights on the bottom of the poster, so it might not be attached to the wall, but it hangs flat.
That's a good point.
Shit, I'll break out of prison.
Yeah, I've always thought about that. Like, I mean, literally,
shit, girl, I'll break out of prison.
What else is there to do other than to spend every day thinking about how you're going to break out?
Wonder what the
most common attempt to breaking out of prison is. Probably something to do with deliveries. You know, there's always
sneaking out in the laundry.
Yeah, stuff going in and out.
Guys always finding, you know, the way into the plumbing system or sewer systems, always, at least that's why I see it depicted in movies and everything.
Mm-hmm.
We should do prison breaks.
Yeah.
Could do one of those.
I always like the concept of like disguise, like pretending you yourself are a prison guard.
Yeah.
You know, you've got on the uniform or whatever and just kind of slide on out.
Yeah, what was that? There was that show Prison Break that was on. You ever watch that?
No, I did not. I know what you're talking about, but I never saw that.
I watched the first few, and once it got away from the idea that the map of the prison was tattooed on the guy's body. Like, that's pretty cool, and then it kind of got old pretty quick.
Oh, well.
Dope, nonetheless.
All right, here's another one. This one here, this fella, a lot of people thought that there might be some validity to this dude.
This fella.
Got him, Kenneth Christensen.
This S.O.B.
Kenneth Christensen, in 2003.
Kenneth.
A guy named Lyle Christensen. Kenneth and Lyle.
Your kids are Kenneth and Lyle.
2003, Lyle Christensen watching a documentary about D.B. Cooper when he connected the dots and he had an epiphany that Cooper was in fact his own brother, Kenneth. Kenneth Christensen was a paratrooper in World War II, later became a flight attendant for Northwest Orient Airlines, the same airline that Cooper skyjacked. Kenneth had always struggled with financial issues until 1972, just months after the skyjacking, when he suddenly purchased a home with cash.
Really?
While dying of cancer in 1994, Kenneth told his brother Lyle while on his deathbed, quote, "There's something you need to know, but I cannot tell you." Well, thanks for bringing it up then.
Yeah, what?
After Kenneth's death, Lyle discovered that Kenneth had over $200,000 in a bank account. Lyle also discovered a folder with dozens of newspaper clippings about the Northwest Orient Airlines. Oh, I guess since he worked for Northwest Orient, he would just any random story he would that appeared in the paper, he would cut them out and keep them as little collectibles or whatever. But none – he had dozens of these newspaper clippings, but none passed the time of the D.B. Cooper case. It, for years leading up to 71, he had all these clippings, but none passed 71.
Just about the airline he worked for.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And Lau found it odd that Kenneth would collect random clippings of Northwest Orient Airline stories, but not the one involving D.B. Cooper, since that was obviously the most famous story that the airline
had. Why would you
been
collect articles about whatever boring shit your airline is doing?
I mean, yeah, maybe, you know, that's just pride in your work. Oh, look, my company's in the paper again. When Florence Schaffner, the flight attendant I was speaking about last week, I forgot her name last week, but the one who initially had all the contact with
Florence
Cooper.
Florence Schaffner.
She's the one that dealt with Cooper the most. He's the one that gave her – he gave her the note and all that. She was shown a bunch of pictures of Christensen after the fact, and she said, quote, "I think you might be onto something here," when referring to Kenneth Christensen. So, I mean, that's, you know – guy's working for the airline. He's a flight attendant. Always broke. Never has any money. And a month after the D.B. Cooper case, he somehow buys a home with cash.
Yeah, all right.
I mean, circumstantial, but still. And then, you know, he's collecting all these newspaper stories of Northwest Orient Airlines, but just stops. You would think it'd be the opposite. Like, you think he... someone would have a bunch of those. Like, why would you
have a box of...
this is too uncomfortable.
I don't even collect things that I've done.
Yeah. Well, people, especially back then, that's not uncommon for people to, you know, collect. When my dad was a kid, he would collect. He was a big New York Yankees fan, and he had all these newspaper clippings of Mickey Mantle and the Yankees and stuff. I think back then, the newspaper was your internet, you know?
Yeah, but you were that much of a fan of your where you work.
Yeah, maybe you didn't have a whole lot going on. Maybe that led to it, but
All right.
Got a few more here. Let me tell you about Robert Rackstraw. Rack. R-A-C-K.
Can't get like a Jeff Jameson in there. Just someone with a regular name.
Robert Rackstraw, he served in the U.S. Army. He had parachute training. He served on several helicopter crews during the Vietnam War until he was kicked out of the Army in 1971 for lying about his education. Once out of the military, Rackstraw was unemployed. He was broke.
Got kicked out of Vietnam for lying.
Yeah, that's what I said. Or, you know, maybe lied about, you know, some of those his forms and applications. Maybe he fudged his education history or whatever. But something happened, and they kicked him out. But, yeah, it is odd that you would kick somebody out like that during a war.
Yeah, like that's like we need them all right now.
You're drafting people, but you're going to kick this guy out on the technicality. There might have been more to that story.
Yeah.
But now he's out of the military. He's broke. He's unemployed. He's living with his stepdad. Rackstraw had floated about $75,000 worth of bad checks in the year following his discharge from the Army.
Yeah.
Just floating checks all over town. Eventually, a warrant for check fraud was issued for his arrest right about the same time that the D.B. Cooper case happened. So around Thanksgiving 71, an arrest warrant was issued. Police arrived at his home to serve the warrant. Get this. He was not there. What they did find, or who they did find, was his stepdad dead inside the home with a gunshot wound to the head.
All right, okay.
So he's living with stepdad. He's floating bad checks. A warrant gets issued. They go try to serve that warrant, and they find dead stepdad. Rackstraw was nowhere to be found. Later discovered that he had fled to Iran. Is it Iran or Iran? I never know how to say that.
Iran.
Iran. Oh, it's not even I. Iran.
I just told her. I'm not saying I'm right. No.
1978.
So they have extradition laws there?
Yes. In 1978, he was arrested in Iran, deported back to America. So this is about 7 years later, to face charges of check fraud and murder. While he's out on bail, several months later, he's released on bail. Get this. Rackstraw attempted to fake his own death by radioing in a false Mayday alert and telling controllers that he was bailing out of a rented plane over Monterey Bay. So he's like, hey, Mayday, Mayday, this plane's going down.
Yeah.
I'm parachuting out. See you later. Police later arrested him in Fullerton, just down the road, on additional charges.
From Monterey Bay?
Well, down the road from us here.
Oh, yeah.
Where is Monterey Bay at? That's,
I'm assuming Monterey, just
yeah,
Monterey,
California?
San Francisco. Yeah,
yeah.
Just south of San Francisco.
Police arrested him in Fullerton on additional charges of forging federal pilot certificates. And then they found the plane he claimed that crashed. They found it repainted in a nearby hangar. Cooper investigators noted his physical resemblance to Cooper. The composite sketches, very similar. His military parachute training and criminal record. But they eliminated him as a suspect in 1979 after no direct evidence of his involvement could be found. So, yeah. Oh, and this is the same dude, if this is who I'm thinking of. Let me check my notes here. This is the same dude. Yeah, Rackstraw is the same dude that the History Channel just last year did a documentary on. This guy, God, what was his name? Some author and journalist wrote a book. I can't remember the guy's name, but he wrote a book and somehow was just convinced that Rackstraw's the dude. He even there's video of him.
Robert Rackstraw?
Yeah, there's video of them, of this author and this producer confronting him down in San Diego. And the guy's real coy. Like, he didn't – you would think if you're innocent, or even if you're not innocent, but if you're just accused of something, that you would be pretty vocal about, like, fuck you. That wasn't me. What are you talking about?
Well,
they approach this guy, and he's just kind of like almost – didn't say this, but just kind of had a demeanor of like, no, I don't want to talk about this. Leave me alone. Like, didn't really.
Maybe he's just tired.
Yeah.
Tired of talking.
I guess so. But then there was some story about that author and this producer of the History Channel documentary that they tried to pay him off for something. They were like, hey, we'll give you $1 million if you just, even if it's not you, just say it's you. So
isn't it beyond the statute of limitations to be punished for it?
That's a good question. I do not know. You would think, I mean, yeah, something like that. I mean, almost any crime has a statute, right? Except like rape and murder, maybe kidnapping.
Yeah.
You'd think something like this would have a statute. So, yeah, Rackstraw, he's alive and kicking down in San Diego. And they did one of those kind of those, what's that show? The news guy is always trying to bust the pedophiles. What's that?
Catch a Predator.
Yeah.
Right?
They kind of did a To Catch a Predator type vibe where they just, you know, approached him in a parking lot and with a microphone and a camera. And he's just like, what the hell? So, old Rackstraw. Get a few more here.
All right. So I'll give you some of these. I still don't know why the crew couldn't have done it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not a bad theory. Let me throw this note out here, by the way. One of the pieces of evidence that they left, that DB Cooper left behind, was that clip on Ty I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
They somehow did some analysis of that and found, I don't know if it was actual DNA, but they found some sort of, I'm going to call it, for lack of a better term, DNA on this tie. And there was some chemicals or something on this tie that is related to the airline industry, like some sort of gas or chemical or something that would be found in an airplane engine.
All right.
So someone working on an airplane engine or something is a pretty unique specimen that they found on this tie. And I guess there was also some sort of DNA sample on that. Many of these suspects that I'm talking about, their DNA was tested and tried to be matched to this tie. None of them came up positive.
Where
as far
did they find
as
a tie? Where's the tie?
The tie was left on the plane. He had that clip-on tie, and I guess he took it off or it ripped off or something. But in all the
crew left the the crew did it. They left the clip out. Oh, look, there's a tie.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
I do. The crew did it. Who's the next person who didn't do it, but you think did it?
All right, here, I'm going to give you three more.
Can sell it to me, man.
All right, I'm going to try to sell this one to you. All right, I don't have all the details on this. Barbara Dayton was born a man, later transitioned to a female, was pissed that she couldn't get a job, wanted to be a pilot her whole life, was pissed that the regulations and the criteria were too steep. I think she had some vision problems. And there's one theory that Barbara Dayton, as a woman, dressed up like a man, did this, parachuted out, and then as soon as she landed, put on her wig and her dress and went about her merry way as a woman. But that's about the extent of her story. All right, Lynn Doyle Cooper. This is a good one. I like this one here. Lynn Doyle Cooper,
all right.
L.D. Cooper. He was a leather worker and a Korean War veteran.
Hot stuff.
He was proposed as a suspect in July of 2011, so years and years later. 2011, his niece, Marla Cooper, was also watching a story about this and thought, oh, crap, that's probably my uncle. As an 8-year-old, Darla recalled that Cooper and her other uncle, Dewey, who Dewey, by the way, worked for Boeing up in Seattle. So as an 8-year-old, she recalled that L.D. and Dewey, both her uncles, they were planning something, quote, very mischievous, involving the use of expensive walkie-talkies at her grandmother's house in Sisters, Oregon, about 150 miles south of Portland. The next day, Flight 305 was hijacked. That's the flight that we're all talking about here. And though the uncles claimed they were turkey hunting, L.D. Cooper came home that day with a bloody shirt. The result, he said, of an auto accident. Marla stated that she overheard Lynn and Dewey say something to the effect of, quote, we did it, our money troubles are over. Later, she said her parents...
that's what people say when they pull up a heist. Is they don't say, we sure did rob all that money.
Well, no, she overheard them. She said that they thought they were alone, and she was kind of spying on them, and that the two uncles were like, hey, we did it.
You know how we stole all that money? Our money troubles are over because we stole that money. Us. We stole money, and now we won't have to worry about money because we stole it.
Later, she said her parents came to believe that L.D. Cooper was, in fact, the hijacker. She also recalled that her uncle, L.D., who died in 99, get this, was obsessed with the Canadian comic book hero, Dan Cooper. There was this Canadian comic book, a whole series of them. Dan Cooper, who on many of the covers, he was skydiving. Mm-hmm. And L.D. was very obsessed with this Dan Cooper comic book, and he had one of those comic books thumbtacked to his wall, although he himself was not a skydiver or a paratrooper.
Well,
wonder why it took her so long to connect those dots. She says all this happened when she was 8. But she just came out years later in 2011. I mean, she never heard of the D.B. Cooper case.
It's such a harmless story to want to be a part of.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the thing, too. Like, if any of these
nobody
that I'm talking
about, nobody got hurt. Nobody.
Yeah, okay. So you think that's – so people want – people are always looking for notoriety. You think this is just a harmless, like – hey, I did that, as opposed to like, hey, I'm the Golden State Killer.
It's everything else saying, oh, I saw Bigfoot, you know. You know, it's got some lore about it later on.
Uh-huh. And like you said, probably statute of limitations. And probably like, you know, you're not going to...
You're old, you heard about a story, you got fascinated with it, maybe...
Not like a rape or a murder where if you confess, you're going to get shunned or ostracized. Where this is like, oh, cool.
That's what I'm saying. Nobody got hurt.
Yeah. A lot of people coming forward saying they did it.
Yeah, I think it's just.
Let me give you a couple more here.
All right.
Dwayne Weber. That's a normal name. Dwayne L. Weber. He was a World War II Army veteran. He served time at least 6 prisons from 1945 to 1968 for burglary and forgery. He was proposed as a suspect by his widow based primarily on his deathbed confession. 3 days before he died back in 1995, Weber told his wife, quote, "I am Dan Cooper." That's the other thing. Like, if you're going to pull a little gag, why are you doing that shit on your deathbed? He told her on his deathbed, quote, "I'm Dan Cooper." The name meant nothing to her at the time. Months later, a friend told her of its significance involving the hijacking. She went to her local library to research D.B. Cooper. She found a book about the subject and discovered that in the notation, that there were notations in the margins of this book that were her own husband's handwriting. So old Dwayne, I guess, had already checked this book out, made some notations in the margins, turned it back in. She's like, oh, shit, that's my dead husband's handwriting. She then recalled in retrospect that Weber once had a nightmare during which he talked in his sleep about jumping from a plane, leaving his fingerprints everywhere.
No.
No?
You confess the crime in your sleep during a nightmare. This is like bad movie. This is what bad movies do.
He also reportedly told her that an old knee injury had been incurred by jumping out of a plane.
Why would you tell anybody?
Like the hijacker, Weber drank bourbon and chain smoked. Other circumstantial evidence included a 1979 trip to Seattle and the Columbia River, during which Weber took a walk along the riverbank of the Tina Bar area. From 4 months later, Brian Ingram made his ransom cash discovery in the same area. I don't know if those notes are correct, because I feel like last week I was talking about that money was discovered just north of Portland, not Seattle.
Well, again, it's like somebody that wishes somebody would put it together.
Mm-hmm.
That's like your parents like letting on that they're Santa Claus if you're too old to believe in Santa Claus. Mm-hmm. Maybe it is me. You don't know.
But why would you do that shit on your deathbed? That just seems...
Because you're dying. Like, why not?
But why are you trying to trick your loved ones? Why lie? I get like
because you're being crazy,
being younger and drunk at a bar, and you got nothing going on, and you just feel like this is something that'll make me sound like my life was worthwhile. But like on your deathbed, by the way, here's a lie.
Deathbed could just be any time after being 80 years old.
But even then, like. Why? I get being young and drunk and stupid, but like, if you're 80 years old, what are you doing making up stupid lies about this?
I don't know, man.
All right, one more for you.
Fine. Give me one more.
This one's a little more detailed. All right, this is the one that just came out a few weeks ago. All right. This guy named, I don't know if it's Rica or Recca, Walter Recca, R-E-C-A. He was a Michigan native, military veteran. He was original member of the Michigan parachute team. That sounds like a fun time. He was listed as suspect by his friend, Carl Lauren, a former airline pilot and expert parachuter himself. Recca confessed to being D.B. Cooper. He confessed to Lauren via a phone conversation a few years before he died. Lauren had suspected all along that his friend Walter Recca might be the hijacker. In 1998, he began a 20-year investigation to uncover the truth about this infamous evening. All right.
Every one of these woodland jamokes was just so happy they didn't have to pretend to see Bigfoot. They're like, no, I'm D.B. Cooper.
Recca gave Lauren permission in a notarized letter to share his story after he passed away. He also allowed Lauren to tape their phone conversations about the crime over a 6-week period in 2008. And I listened to some of those. And yes, just the audio recording of them having a conversation. And he knew he was being taped. It's not like he was, you know, tricking him into anything.
Yeah, gave him the heads up.
Mm-hmm. And just gave a very confident and detailed recollection of what happened, including details about the hijacking that the public had no knowledge of. They didn't go into specifics, but they just said that there were details in these audio recordings that the general public didn't have knowledge of. Notably, Recca described a man he had run into within an hour of his jump. Lauren, an experienced pilot, used his years of training to determine the location of the jump. He was positive that Recca, a.k.a. D.B. Cooper, landed near Cleellum, Washington, which is way off the course, very far away from where they thought the original drop zone was. Mm-hmm. So he thinks he landed in Cleellum, Washington. We drove right through there last week, by the way. So here's a story about this guy he encountered. All right. Let's see. Where did it go?
Oh, yeah.
Lauren began to search for the witness after Recca described the landscape he saw while on the way to the drop zone. He's talking about two bridges, some distinct lights, description of the exterior and interior of a cafe. He also described his encounter with the witness in detail, recalling that he was wearing Western gear, including a cowboy hat and a guitar case. Lauren dubbed him the cowboy. All right, so Lauren consulted a map to find these particular landmarks and began making phone calls about the cowboy who had driven a dump truck. Remarkably, Lauren was put in contact with this guy named, what's his name, Jeff Osadich. Spelled differently, but I think it's pronounced Jeff Osadich, Native American dude, resident of Cleellum, Washington. He recalled meeting Recca that night, described as wearing what had looked like, described him wearing the same clothes that that the composite sketch, talking about he had white shirt, no tie, because that tie is still on the plane, but he had a white shirt, black coat, black slacks, black shoes. According to witness testimony, Osadich said he was driving his dump truck along Highway 970 the night of November 24th, 71, when he saw a man walking down the side of the road in stormy weather. It's raining. This guy's just walking in the middle of nowhere. He assumed the man's car had broken down. He's walking to get assistance. He didn't stop and offer help because Osadich was driving a dump truck that didn't have a passenger seat, and he also said that his boss didn't want him picking up hitchhikers. So he continues on. He goes to this cafe, the Tiana Way Junction Cafe, just outside of Cleellum. After ordering some coffee, the man from the side of the road entered. All right, this guy, the guy he saw walking in the middle of nowhere, he enters. He entered the cafe looking like what Osadich said, quote, a drowned rat. The man sat next to him, asked if he'd be able to give his friend directions if he made a phone call. He said, yes, Osadich, hey, if I make his phone call to my buddy, can you tell my buddy how to come here and pick me up? So the guy didn't know where he was at. Mm-hmm. So he found that that was odd. Osadich agreed to do so. He spoke to Recca's friend, gave him directions to the cafe. Shortly after that, Osadich left for he was playing a country music gig over at the Grange Hall. It's kind of like a version of like a VFW. Recca offered to pay for his coffee. Two men parted amicably and never to be seen again. But he gave a description. The description that he gave Lauren is the exact same description that fit the D.B. Cooper, the outfit and everything. So.
Yeah, but it's not like he was dressed like fucking Little Richard. It was a black suit and a white shirt.
Yeah, he's in the middle of nowhere. Doesn't know where he's at.
Shut the fuck up, Alexa. See? Why does that have to happen in the middle of the day? And I forget that it's even there?
So crazy.
I'll throw that goddamn can out the
window. Why do you even have those?
It's Rachel's.
She's got both? One of those is yours.
No, I don't have any of that shit.
You got two? She's got two of them? Why she
no,
got two?
No, there's one of them.
I thought you had one of each. I thought you had the...
No.
Oh. I don't know.
We haven't used it. I didn't even know it was alive still. You talk about deathbed. That thing. You're on your deathbed, Alexa.
So this all came out a few weeks ago, and again, because this Lauren dude, Carl Lauren, wrote a book. I think it's called D.B. Cooper, My Friend, or something like that. And they had this big press conference, and the publishers making all these claims and stuff. There's, I don't know, I watched this whole 30-minute interview, and there really, other than what I just said, there wasn't a lot of evidence, you know. But like somehow they wrote a book. And just because, and this guy, Osadich, is still alive. And, you know, he told Lauren about this mystery encounter with this dude at the cafe. But also, other researchers think that this story's total bullshit simply because of where he was supposed to have landed. It's way off. Cleellum is nowhere near where they thought he would have landed because the plane itself didn't even go in that mm-hmm. path, because Cleellum is good ways to the east of Seattle. So if you're going from Seattle to Portland via airplane, you wouldn't
you know
really
D.B.
go.
D.B. Cooper got food for the crew.
Really?
When he landed.
That's
in
nice.
In addition to the $200,000 mm-hmm. in his parachutes, also food for these guys.
He paid for his drinks. I thought that was impressive. going to steal $200,000.
It's because he's not fucking real, Dave.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, DB says we can get steaks and lobsters.
Oh, that's what you're implying.
Yes, that's what I'm implying.
Oh, I thought fucking you were implying crew. That DB was just a gentleman.
No, the crew stole this shit.
So tell me again how the crew would have done. I've given you all this shit. Let me hear your
flight.
Account.
What time this flight was at?
Well, it took off from Portland around 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
The afternoon flight, short flight. Nobody's paying attention to anything. Nobody else has any eyewitness recollection of this guy on the plane. They haven't interviewed. You got no other interviews about other people on the plane? It's only the crew. The only people who interacted with him.
Yeah.
And he only had notes. Mm-hmm. Do they have the notes?
No, he got them back.
Oh, he got them back. Okay, yeah. He kept the notes. The only thing about this guy was like a clip-on tie is the only proof that maybe he was there. A clip-on fucking tie.
Uh-huh.
The kind that you could just have.
Uh-huh.
Oh, and so we landed. Here's two of the nobody in the plane recognized a different person. They didn't count how many people got off versus how many people got on. He bought his ticket in cash, so there's no paper trail.
Uh-huh.
So you don't even know that he bought. Do they know what seat he was in?
Yeah, they knew what seat he was in.
But this was before manifests or seating documents.
And apparently there was a ticket. Like, the crew did it. Where'd this ticket come from?
Anybody walking up the counter and buying it in cash. If you didn't have to show an ID.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. You just get somebody else to go buy it.
ID prove you bought anything. Gotcha. You just paid for it in cash and didn't have to show an ID.
Okay.
So there's a ticket purchased. Cool. That means, that means somebody would have been in the seat. That means nobody else could have been like, I was sitting in that seat, so it's not true. But you don't know who's in – and you're not – especially not going to notice somebody who's not there. It's just an empty seat on an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they land in Seattle where they're supposed to land anyway.
Yeah. That I never understood. They were going to Seattle, but then they acted as if they were making some sort of emergency landing in Seattle. And then they had to tell the passengers a lie, we're having mechanical trouble. I never understood that.
I think they're just trying to put salt on a turd for that part.
Uh-huh.
Because you landed where you're supposed to land, everybody else got off. But now I have this crew hostage that also wants snacks.
Uh-huh.
And I want $200,000. And 4 parachutes.
Well, would that happen today if the concept of, hey, I got a bomb, and whether he said this or not, you could imply that I'm willing to go kamikaze on y'all's ass. I got a bomb. I'm willing to blow myself and everybody else up. But, like, granted, I'm just – all I have is the stuff I've read, but it's like, we'll get your $200,000. No problem. But, like – I guess you would – like, I wonder how they deal with stuff like that nowadays.
Where are the details of who got the cash on the plane?
The commissioner of the SeaTac airport was the one who called a bunch of banks and gathered the money. And then
– But then what? They put it down in a bag and the flight attendant got off the plane, so nobody ever saw D.B. Cooper pick up the money?
Nobody ever saw
a guy with a bomb?
I don't know how physically the money got on the plane.
Still zero confirmation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what $200,000 looks like. They're saying here that
it was $10,000 $20
bills. $10,000 $20
bills. It's a lot of bills.
Yeah.
One of those, usually like when you see a stack, usually they come in stacks of 100. Mm-hmm. So like a stack of 100 hundreds, that'd be 10,000, right? So I guess his stacks.
120s is $2,000.
So he had 1,000 of those stacks.
No,
100 of those stacks. I'm sorry. 100 stacks.
What is physically, like, you couldn't jam it all in the bottom of the seats. You couldn't hide. Let me. How many? What was the stack of what?
Let me just see what a stack of
100 bills looks like. It doesn't matter which bill you use.
Yeah.
Stack of $100 bills.
That'd be, about 2 or 3 inches thick, stacked high?
Yeah, it looks like it. That's it. So.
So we had 10,000 $20 bills, and if they're in stacks of 100, then that means he'd
just
have
a stack
100.
Of 100 bills, yeah.
Yeah, 100 stacks. So, which really isn't that much. Like this little table we're on, we could probably put 100 stacks without even doubling up.
No. 100,000 divided by 20. I don't know. I can't math. I got like
200,000 divided by 20.
200,000 divided by 20. Mm-hmm. So that's 10,000.
Mm-hmm. 10,000 bills.
I can't. This is why I did bad at math. I can't. Like, I literally, my brain is just like an engine that won't start when it comes to looking at numbers.
Would that be 100 stacks?
Is it? Okay, yeah. I'm going to trust you.
Mm-hmm. If you've got 100 bills in each stack.
100 bills, 100 in each stack. Mm-hmm.
All right. So you could, I mean, you could fit that. That's in an attaché case. You could fit that in a briefcase.
Yeah, if it's going to be in an attaché case, although, you can't hide that in and out an airplane, in and around an airplane.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not saying it was in an attaché case. The bomb was in the attaché case. but if you had another attaché case, you could totally pull that off.
So he strapped it to his leg, allegedly.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking crew stole this shit.
And really?
That's that. Yes, absolutely.
Hmm.
They did everything right. They threw a little bit out. They threw some chutes out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they threw the parachutes out. They threw a few bucks out. Perfect crime.
You think they threw that, I think it was $5,800 they found
on
the bank of the river.
Yeah.
Why would they throw that money? Why would they throw that out?
Take them off the scent.
Mm-hmm.
Throw a couple of the chutes out and throw if they're just throwing the chutes out without opening them, they wouldn't have investigated them.
What if it was one of those ghost pilots from the flight of 401?
They're on the flight of 401. This is the flight of D.B. Cooper. It's not the same. Why is a ghost going to steal money, Dave?
That's true. It's a good point. Hey, I'm just spitballing here, buddy.
You keep spitballing.
Oh, man. I don't think the crew did it, man. I think.
Listen, there's a lot of interesting people, but again, it's a harmless thing. Everybody can jump out of the woodwork and be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Who's not jumping out of the woodwork? The people who actually stole the shit, and it was the crew of the plane.
Hmm. I think of all the ones.
One lady became a nun?
Uh-huh. Yeah. I think it's Kenneth Christensen. This dude worked for the airline. He's always broke. A month after D.B. Cooper thing, he buys a house in cash. And the main eyewitness, the flight attendant, Florence Schaffner, she says, out of all the pictures that she saw, that Christensen resembled him the most. Quote, I think you might be onto something here.
Of course, you would love to pin it on somebody else.
Yeah, because you think Schaffner's in on it.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Watch out. Count it.
Book it, bro.
Huh. Well.
Oh, it's a big plane. This thing has lots of seats.
That's what you say every time you board a plane.
It's a big plane. It has lots of seats.
Yeah, Kyle, it does. Yeah, it's a big ass plane. It was a 727, I think. That's your big boy. It's not the biggest, but it's a big one. A couple other people. William Gossett, if you guys want to look him up, he was a suspect. Richard Lepsey. I think William Gossett is the one. I can't remember his story, but. This William Gossett character, I believe, he's the one that looked very similar to the composite drawing.
Mm. Oh, I'm reading about this.
Well, and to be honest with you, I never, I mean, I'm the one that chose to do this, but I never understood why this was such a, you know. I mean, it's an intriguing story, but like...
Yeah, it's a guy who got away with it.
I guess that's the appeal of this story. Yeah, he got away with it.
Yeah, this guy.
So they think.
Nobody's bringing up the crew. There's been no obvious...
I've read nothing about the crew being...
There's been no obvious shutdown of the crew. Like, of course it's not them because of this.
Yeah.
Unless it's out there and I haven't looked for it. All right, well, I'm still...
Still solid.
I think it's Kenneth Christensen.
All right. Yeah, we all got.
For I did think it might have been your dad. I don't know why you told me. I thought you told me your dad was on a cane.
No.
And then this guy, some of these guys.
Also, we sure as shit did not have $200,000 in the 70s.
But your dad, I wouldn't even try to connect these dots at the time, but when I met him, I was like, man, this guy's got some secrets.
He's got it. Trust me, he's got secrets.
You think he does?
Oh, yeah.
He was in the military, right? Was he in Vietnam?
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
For a while.
For a while.
For a little while.
What branch was he in?
He was an airline mechanic for the Army, I think. He was working on their stuff. I don't know. I don't think it was Air Force, though. Hmm. He don't talk about it.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys, he don't talk about it.
Yeah, I could tell he's one of those guys that just doesn't say much, and those are the guys that...
Yeah.
There's a reason they don't say much.
Exactly. So all these people, I took the money. I'm D.B. Cooper. No.
I guess we'll never know.
Was your dad in the military?
He was. He was in the Army.
Yeah.
He was in the Army for 3 years during Vietnam. Didn't see combat. He was stationed in Germany. And not to disrespect any military folks, but... You would think my dad was John Rambo, the way he recounts stories of his 3 years in the Army. And that's great, but like, he's one of the guys who just loved it. He loved everything.
Oh, yeah.
And I never understood. I never asked him. Like, well, if you loved it so much, why didn't you just make a career out of it? You know, why not stay in? But, yeah. He tells the same five stories over and over and over.
Were they?
It's just... But I get it.
My dad did not like it.
No, he wasn't a fan.
Not a fan.
So he was stationed in Vietnam or just during?
He was in the Philippines. Where the air base was. Mm.
You know where he went to boot camp?
I don't. Again, like I said, he's a tight-lipped dude. I know when he finished, he was in Sacramento. I know he's in Sacramento. He's in Alaska. I don't know if Sacramento, but up north, because I remember he said when he finished, he came down to L.A. and drove a motorcycle back Route 66, because Route 66 starts at Santa Monica Pier and ends in Chicago.
Yeah.
So he rode back on Route 66 on a motorcycle. I don't know much else.
Huh.
Yeah, he didn't talk about much else.
My dad was in boot camp the same time, not at the same place, but the same time Elvis Presley was in the Army.
Oh, really?
And I think my dad... knew some guys that were in boot camp with him, with Elvis.
Stationed with Elvis was in Germany, that's right.
Yeah, I think so. I think he was in Germany.
They were keeping Elvis safe.
My dad was in Germany. This is a cool story. My dad saw the Beatles in Hamburg, Germany before they were famous.
That was like where they cut their teeth, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were like the house band doing like, you know, three sets a night, seven nights a week, that kind of thing. But he remembers seeing the Beatles before they were the Beatles.
Oh, that's pretty cool. There you go.
Take that.
You show them who's boss, buddy.
This diet A&W's got some bite, dude.
Warm. I thought I was going to belch myself to death when I drank warm root beer.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I thought I was going to burp to death.
Oh, well, should we jump out of this airplane and land it? No, let's try to...
Jump out of this airplane and land it?
Let's try to connect some dots there. And didn't really work.
Jesus Christ.
Should we parachute out of this?
Sure,
bitch?
Man. All right.
What you got to plug?
When's this out?
June 5th is today.
Sure.
That's how you say that.
On this day of 5th of June.
Where are you going to be? You got your big...
I'm in Boston tomorrow night. In Boston at the Wilbur tomorrow night, and then the Vermont Comedy Club in Burlington this weekend.
Oh, right on, buddy.
And then I ain't doing shit for a couple weeks.
I'm just starting this week my kind of 3 or 4 week tour. You can catch me on the 8th and 9th of June. I'll be in Lowell, Arkansas.
Lowell!
At the Grove. 15th, 16th, Springfield, Missouri at the Blue Room Comedy Club. 17th, I'll be in St. Louis at Southtown Pub. 19th, Milwaukee at Underground Collaborative. And on the 20th, Chicago folks, I'll be at North Bar. Or at North Bar, they call it. I get the little at sign. I don't know.
Yeah.
Also be in Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, Columbus, Cleveland, Wilmington, North Carolina. I'll tell those. I'll tell you about that next week. Yeah, dude.
All right, man.
Holler at your boys.
Bye.
The Boogie Monster.